Matthew chapter 2, please. Matthew chapter 2. All right, let's all stand. If you have a Bible, you can read along. If you do not, or you prefer, you can read behind me, whichever works for you. If you're reading the ESV, it does something I would consider bizarre, but don't get nervous. All translations do bizarre things. Translates the same word in two different ways in Matthew 2, which makes zero sense to me. Even though it's correct, it's still wrong. I gave you something to think about there. Verse 1. Now, when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, by the way, you should recognize that from a little book called Ruth. There was a couple, a young couple that left the town called Bethlehem, and Bethlehem is Bethlehem, house of bread. Literally, Bet is the Hebrew word for house. Lechem is the Hebrew word for bread. They left the house of bread because there was no bread. They went to another country called Moab. Everybody died. One daughter came back, one of the daughter-in-laws by the name of Ruth. And in little Bethlehem, she meets Boaz. They have a child, and from that child descends David. So the little town of Bethlehem, Bethlehem, is a very important little town. By the way, not a big little town. It wouldn't be nearly the size of right beside us. Tiny town. It says this. When Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea in the days of Herod the king, Herod the great, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem. The word east, we get Anatolia from. It's also used of Turkey. It means either east or the rising of the sun. That's really deep. The sun rises in the east. It just simply meant they came from the east. We'll talk about that later. Verse 2, saying, where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, where they were from, and are come to worship him. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all of Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests, that's the phrase that's used mostly in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Other languages used in John, it would be what we call the Sadducees. The elite of the elite, the chief priest and scribes of the people, probably Pharisees, a different branch of Judaism. These two groups didn't like each other. He gathered them all together, and it says he demanded of them, and this is a strange statement I noticed last night as I was rereading this for about the 20th time, where Christ, which means the Messiah, should be born. He asked them a very theological question. He didn't say where Jesus was going to be born. He said where the Messiah was to be born. And they said unto him, in Bethlehem of Judea. Why? For thus it is written by the prophet, and thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not thou least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had privily or privately called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. By the way, this tells us something. Everyone, this goes with that two-year factor. I don't know when it happened, but we do know this. He wanted to know when this first appeared to you because he's going to do something to the children under that age. So, and it also tells you they east, by the way, east of here is Sheridan Road. But I don't think we would call that the east. It had to be a long distance away. We'll talk about that in a moment. So he wanted to know when this star appeared. Verse 8. And he sent them, the wise men, to Bethlehem and said, go and search diligently for the young child. And when you have found him, bring me word again that I may come and worship him also. When they had heard the King Herod the Great, they departed, and lo, or behold, the star which they saw in the east went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was, which indicates whatever this phenomenon was, star, comet, or whatever, wasn't always there, wasn't always leading them. There were gaps. I don't know what this means. Verse 10, when they saw the star, they rejoiced. And by the way, in Greek, any of you that read Greek, it cannot be said any more loudly. Like somebody is taking symbols, big ones, and slanging them together. It says they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. I mean, they weren't a little happy. As much as you can say in language, they were rejoicing. And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child, no longer a baby, a young child now, no longer a napioi or napios, and now a brephos, a young child, with Mary, his mother. And it says, and they fell down and worshiped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold and frankincense and myrrh. Verse 12, which is going to, I'll deal with this next week. And being warned of God in a dream that they should not return to Herod, they departed into their own country another way. This morning, we're going to look at simply this title, Reactions to the Messiah, Reactions to Christ. And we're going to kind of flow through the story. My goal this morning, by the way, you've heard this story since, if you were an American like this guy, which most of you aren't, I heard this in public grade school. We read this in our public grade school. Whether or not we were allowed to, I don't know, but we did it. So I've learned this at church, grade school, heard it my whole life. My goal isn't to tell you the story. No, I'm not going to do with any silliness. I'm going to add some things to this that maybe help you understand some of this and to understand the various reactions to Christ coming into the world from the text. Let's pray. Father, thank you. May I be of help this morning, I ask. May this be helpful and useful, I ask in Christ's name. Amen. You may be seated. The story so far. By the way, I assume you know this is not the beginning of the story. So everyone look at me. I'm going to expand, and this is where maybe something will click in your mind that you hadn't put together. That would be my goal. There was a young couple living in what's called Galilee. Galilee was the northern part of the Promised Land. There was Galilee, Samaria, and Judea. So a young couple living in Galilee, the northern part of Israel, not yet married. Mary, the wife, Miriam, was found with child. A miracle had occurred. I'm going to use four different ways of saying this. Look at me, friend. I had a woman come to me. I've been lied to before, have you? I had a girl come to my office 25 years ago and say, I'm pregnant. And I have never been with a man. Did I believe her? She did tell the truth. It was actually, I think, seven. Not one, but seven different guys. So she didn't know which one it was. This is a one-off. Or this is one out of one. This is absolutely unique. This in Latin is sui generis, which means absolutely unique. The virgin birth, my friend, is not something that happened before or after. It's a one-off, one of a kind, one out of one, sui generis, absolutely unique. Tom, if you'll put the verses, Matthew 1:21 says this. The Lord reveals to Joseph, she shall bring forth a son, and thou shalt call his name Jesus. That is the English form of Greek. We never have it in any other language, in Greek, Jesus, but that's close enough. Jesus, it's related to the Old Testament word Joshua. It says, why? Why call him this? For he shall save his people from their sins. So the story is, young couple living in the north, wife is pregnant. God has to reveal to the husband not to separate from her. They're not even married yet. He says a miracle has occurred. In verse 22, it says, now all of this was done that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, behold, a virgin shall be with child. And friend, this is the unique part. A virgin shall be with child and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel. That can be spelled with an I or an E according to the language. In Hebrew, it's Emmanuel. It's with us, God. He gives us the interpretation because it's written in Greek, which being interpreted is God with us. So this story begins with a pronouncement or an announcement that a young lady, a virgin, would have a child. That child would be called Jesus because he would save people from their sins. And that young child would be God with us. That's pretty astounding. Will you show the map? See if we can see the map. Can you see the map? Now, friends, I'm going to assume most of us don't know any geography at all. That's pretty safe. That right there is about as big as the thumb on your hand. Don't think Israel's this massive place, friends. It's very small. A few counties in northern Illinois would be this big. In Jesus' day, you basically had in the south Judah. These was Roman divisions. The Romans had conquered this part of the world, 63 BC, Pompey the Great. They separated Judea in the south. They had many more problems there because of Jerusalem was there. So they put a Roman governor there most of the time. Samaria was the place in between, which was kind of a mixture of people, and the Jews didn't like those people. North of that is Galilee. Matthew chapter 4 calls it Galilee of the Gentiles because it's surrounded and many Gentile people live in that area. Of course, the Jordan River, where I'm from, we'd call it the Jordan Creek. It's right down, this splits the center of the country. You have the Dead Sea at the bottom. You have the Sea of Galilee, Lake Tiberias, or Lake Kinneret in the Old Testament a few times. At the top, on the Perea, is modern-day Jordan. The Decapolis meant 10 Greek cities. That's modern-day mostly Jordan, too. So that's the layout of the land. Here's the story. The young couple is living in the north, Nazareth in Galilee. But they're not from there. They're from the south, Bethlehem, which is, from my understanding, 6 miles from Jerusalem. Now, I grew up with this story. Did you? Bethlehem, to me, I'm thinking, I'm going to go see. Let me say this. Have you ever seen something and it impressed you? Or seen something and it didn't impress you? Jenny and I saw something that impressed us this week. Driving out of Pensacola towards Hattiesburg, Mississippi, the Bay of Mobile is impressive. Look at me. Bethlehem was not impressive. Tiny little town. It just happened to be where David was from, so it was the ancestral homeland. This couple, not yet delivered the baby. The baby was not born in Nazareth, where they're from in the north, but he was to go back because of taxes to Bethlehem, which was his ancestral homeland. I'm 68 years old. Most of my life, I have lived in Waukegan or somewhere in the Chicagoland area, but that's not where I'm from. Do you understand the difference? Where I'm from is southwestern Illinois in the hills along the Illinois and the Mississippi River. That's where I'm from. That's my roots. If you say, would you like to go home? Look at me. If I go home, that's where I go home to, though nobody lives there anymore. That's my same with them. They went back to Bethlehem for the baby to be born. Now, while she was still in Bethlehem, this is found in Luke, her being with child, she has the baby. We come to this story. They're now living in Bethlehem. How long have they lived here? Look at me, friends. Luke puts the birth in a manger. They're no longer in a manger. Now they're in a home. It almost seems like they're living there now. Probably still had relatives there, probably working there. They're residing there for how long? Up to 2 years. No longer in Greek is the baby called Nepios, which means a non-speaker. Now the baby Jesus is called a child, a young child, Brephos, which means not a baby. So the story picks up after the birth, up to 2 years later, in Bethlehem, where the family now resides. By the way, when you read the rest of the story, after this event that we read this morning, Joseph and Mary and the baby is going to flee into Egypt until Herod the Great is dead, because Herod the Great wants to kill them. They're going to stay there. They're then going to come back. I think it looks like they were going to come back to Bethlehem, but the ruler that the Romans put in place was not a nice person, so they went back to Nazareth. Jesus grew up in the north, in Nazareth. In the north, not in his ancestral homeland. All right, now we go to the message. I'm going to try to stay away from cliches for all of you that were in Sunday school. In Matthew chapter 2, verse 1, it says, "Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men, magoi, from the east," the word we get Anatolia from, but it meant where the sun rose. It had other implications, and it says, "And they are come to worship," "They were come from the east to Jerusalem, saying, where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east and are come to worship him." We're going to look at three reactions to Jesus in the text. The first reaction is the one that we all want to put our name. Friends, three reactions: wise men, Herod, scholars. All of us want to be the wise men. As I read this text, the third part is the hardest thing. Look at me. I got people that can't look at me already. Do you recognize you are going to be the third point? You know everything and you follow nothing. It's all a big joke to you. We'll come to that later. I'm not mad at anybody. I almost thought of just talking about that this morning. Number one, we have wise men. The wise men came seeking him. They came seeking him. Wise men. They come from the east. What do we know? Well, we know that they're called wise men, but that doesn't really help us. So yesterday we were driving in the south. It's up here too. I saw some sign someplace. You've seen it 1,000 times. It's a nice cliche. Wise men. Come on. Wise men still seek him. That's nice. But I want to say this. When you read this text, this is what you should have. Especially if you understand what it means, a wise man. It's not talking about somebody with great wisdom. It's talking about a class of people. Behind me, I say this, wise men, the Greek word is magos, singular, magoi, plural. A lot of times you'll see magi, M-A-G-I. The word means wise men, yes, counselors, scholars. It's oftentimes related to astronomy, which is oftentimes related to astrology. Oftentimes they were considered charlatans, tricksters. And the word magi, when it's used in the rest of the New Testament, means magician. So your first thought shouldn't be, "I'm one of the wise guys. I would seek Jesus." Your first thought should be, "Huh? A group of these people from the east come all the way to Jerusalem and then to Bethlehem looking for the Messiah. That's not the group that I thought would seek Jesus. This is the opposite of what I thought would seek Jesus. I thought there would be a lot magoi, people." What? By the way, friend, I'm not going to spend the time. You look through the Old Testament. The Old Testament condemns this group of people over and over and over. All of the pagan kings had these kind of people working for them that would read the stars to know what you should do on certain days and not on certain days. That would cut animals open and look at their liver to read their livers. This is not the group that you think is going to travel all the way to Jerusalem to worship Christ. You don't think so. Well, they come from the east. My guess, they come from what we would call Mesopotamia, or for some of you, Mesopotamia. Mesopotamia, the land between the rivers, modern-day Iraq. I'm going to guess further. I would tend to think what we called Persia in the past. In Jesus' day, that was called Parthia, and today it's called Iran. Because, as I say behind me, that's the home of Daniel, Nehemiah, Ezra, and Jews in large numbers up until quite recently. In Acts chapter 2, on the day of Pentecost, when Jewish believers, when proselytes and even God-fearers from all around the world came to Jerusalem, and they heard the gospel preached, as the text says, Acts 2:8. And now we hear every man in our own tongue, each of us in the very idiosyncratic dialect in Greek. It's the dialect that I speak, and then it says, wherein we were born, meaning probably that unique dialect to your home. We hear everyone speak that language, miraculous, by the way, and then verse 9 tells you what some of those languages were. The first one is Parthians. By the way, Parthian is not a religious word. It's not a word to skip. It's where the Persians were. It's where Daniel was. It's where Ezra was. It's where Nehemiah was. It's where the Jews were up until 1948 in great number. Great number. Medes and Elamites would be people more in Iraq, and dwellers in Mesopotamia, again, more in Iraq in between the rivers. You say, I'm guessing. Look at me, friend. East doesn't mean, let's see, which direction am I pointed? That's west, east. Yes, Sheridan Road is east of us, but you wouldn't say they came from the east. But if you said came from the east like New York State, that's coming from the east. Whoever this was came from a long distance to come to see the Christ. That's the story. Wise men, not who you would expect, not wise men still seek him. Look at me, friend. I'm sorry. I'm not trying to be critical of anybody. Look at me. We have all kinds of little religious things. Wise men still seek him. I like that. But that's not what the text is talking about. You should never hear that when you read this. Those people came? That's your response. I say, and it'll be behind me. The wise men came. They came from great distance. If they came from Parthia, that's a long way away. You don't get there in 5 minutes. You don't get there in 15 minutes. You had to travel by foot or maybe by an animal. You would spend a long period of time. That's the reason Herod wanted to know. How long ago did this happen? How long has this been? And he gives a 2-year time. Because it's going to take some time. They obviously came at great cost. Wait a minute. These aren't Jewish people. These aren't the people that are supposed to come to see Jesus. Who are these people? Why did they come? What's the deal? They saw a star, maybe referring to Numbers, Balaam's prophecy about a star, maybe. Maybe they had talked to Jewish people, be my guess, and learned something about the Messiah coming in Jerusalem. But friends, they came. They came from a long way away. They came at great cost. It wouldn't have been free. They came with very limited knowledge and information. They came to worship. They came specifically to worship him and him alone. And they came with costly gifts. You say, Pastor Warren, What do the gifts represent?
The answer is, I don't know and don't care. They brought gold. They brought frankincense. They brought myrrh. All of those would have been very expensive items that a normal person would not have. Let me ask everybody, how many of you have gold wedding rings? A few of you do? How many of you can afford a gold wedding ring today? Have you looked at the price of gold? By the way, normal people didn't have gold. They brought something. They spent a lot of money. They come. They're not the people you're like, shouldn't it be Jewish people coming? Shouldn't it be believers coming? Magoi? Wise men from the East? Aren't those people charlatans? Maybe through Daniel. Maybe through Daniel's influence among people like this that he worked among in Babylon and in Persia. Maybe the descendants that flowed down the road, the different Jewish people. All I know is a group of wise people come all the way to Jerusalem. The star leads them there. Somehow it doesn't continue to lead them for a while, and they want to know about the Messiah. Matthew chapter 2, verse 9.
It says, when they had heard the king, meaning King Herod, they departed, and lo, the star, which they saw in the east, went before them till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced.
Again, this is not who should be rejoicing. They rejoiced with exceeding great joy.
And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child, no longer a baby, somewhat older, with Mary, his mother.
And it says very specifically, by the way, this is the definition of worship when it's used in a context of worship. You fall down. Proskuneo means, and I'm not going to do it because I'd have, well, I can do it and get back up. They fell down. Somebody said, don't do it. I'll do it anyhow. They fell down. My left knee is still strong, the new one. By the way, they fell down at least to their knees. Proskuneo can also mean actually to put your face on the ground. I won't do that. Cliff, you'd have to get me up. You and Harley then. All right. Look at me, friend. They bowed down to the ground. And they worshiped, look at me, they worship him. They didn't worship them, not mom and dad worship, not Mary worship. I'm not trying to be critical, it's just Christian. They worshiped Christ. People that you're like, why would they be here?
This text humbles me.
Very few things humble me.
One thing that humbles me is when you meet somebody that knows very little, and yet they surprise you with what they do. They heard. They could not have known much. They heard. They saw. They came a long distance, and they came to worship the Christ.
They shouldn't have been the ones. That humbles me. Sometimes certain people will humble me with their simplicity. I wanted to talk about this, but I don't have time this morning. Simplicity means there's no complexity. Let me give you an example. Kevin Bowder is my friend. Some of you know Dr. Bowder. He hasn't been here in a while. Dr. Bowder is because we get all into our emotions now. He's a brilliant man. The funny part is, he is a brilliant man here and the simplest guy I've ever met. There's no layers to him. Some people, you never get them. You always get layers. They know the right layer to give you. Bowder is what you see is what you get. That impresses me. A great mind and a simple person. Most people are the opposite. Not much of a mind, but lots of layers. They're complicated. Complex. Here are some men that just came. I can't imagine them coming, and they came and worshiped him. By the way, wise men seeking him. That's the first reaction. Not wise men still seek him. That's silliness. People that shouldn't seek him were seeking him. People that didn't know were seeking him. That's the first reaction. And that should be your response. Am I part of that group? So this week, by the way, I need to back up for a second. This week is Christmas. I'm a simple guy. I want you to spend time with your children, your families, your friends. I'm not a guilt guy. We're not having a service here this week during the week. We're not having 3 weeks, three services to keep you away from your family. We want you with your family. But by the way, if in the middle of that you don't seek Him, you've missed the whole point. You may be confused food with Christ. You may be confused a present with Christ. My friend, these people, these, whatever they were, counselors to, they were counselors to kings. Some of it was weird. We don't know about them specifically. They came, and that humbles me. They came to worship Him. Well, number two, we'll go back to Matthew chapter 2. When they got there, it says, they'll sing, "Where is he that is born King of the Jews?" Now, friend, right there, there's already a king in the story. Hello? Hello? How would I like you if you were the boss of your corporation, somebody walked in and said, "That's the boss"? Herod was a king. All of a sudden, they're coming and they're asking in Jerusalem, "Where is he that is born King of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, the rising of the sun in a distance, and are come to worship him." When Herod the king heard these things, by the way, that there was a king born to be king, ooh, we got a problem now. And it says, "And all of Jerusalem with him." The text says nothing else about Jerusalem, so I'm not going to follow up on that. I'm going to focus on Herod. Verse 3. When Herod the king heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. Verse 4, and when he had gathered the chief priests and the scribes and the people together, he demanded of them where, this is strange, Herod knew enough about the Bible to know that the Messiah was promised. Hey, he knew enough about the Bible that he knew a Messiah was coming. What did he do with that? He wanted to kill him because he was born King of the Jews. Wow, that's an interesting response. So he goes to his scholars, the people in Jerusalem, the chief priests, which would be the Sadducees, the scribes, which would probably be the Pharisees, two opposing groups. He demanded of them where the Messiah, the Christ, should be born. Then Herod, when he had privily, I'm skipping some verses, privily or privately, called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. So he now knows the Messiah is born. We don't have it on the screen. That's fine. The Messiah is born in Bethlehem, real close to Jerusalem. He knows that. Now he wants to know, well, okay, when did you see this sign? How long ago? About 2 years. Ah, gotcha. So the story continues. It's not a good story. Verse 8. And he sent them. He says, "You guys go ahead to Bethlehem and go and search diligently for the young child. And when you have found him, bring me word again." Oh, I love this term. Now, I'm not going to repeat what Forever Young said to me last Sunday. He probably has forgotten. But I'm going to say this to all of you. We have people in this room that think people are Christians who are not Christians. When somebody said a few years back, 2 Corinthians, anybody who is a Christian knows you ain't no Christian. You mean you've not been in church enough to know that you don't call 2 Corinthians 2 Corinthians? The answer would be no, he hasn't. By the way, Herod says, "You guys go worship him. Come back and tell me. I want to come and worship him too. Worship him with a blade or a spear." Okay, just keep reading. Well, we know later, it says, then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men. I don't know if that's the best language. He was tricked. He was fooled by the wise men. It says he was very happy. That's old English. He was furious. And he sent forth and murdered all the children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coast thereof and all that old English, just, you know, the small little community And just to make sure, everyone look at me. Where's Beach Park start and where does Beach Park end?
What'd you say, Tom? There you go.
So we, you know, we're right here. By the way, but Herod did this. He said, I'm not sure where Beach Park ends and where it starts, so we'll take the building too. You know, we included everything. I want to make sure I kill that person born King of the Jews, the Messiah. Well, that's our second point, friend. Look at me. First group of people, everybody. But don't do the religion. Not wise men like they're so intelligent. You're missing the entire point. They were people that should not have been expected. Seeking him. Herod opposing him. Herod wants to get rid of him. That's his goal. He wants to get rid of it. Get rid of him quickly. So that's number two. Herod the Great opposing him. Herod the Great. And I'm going to skip the verses, Tom. We've already read them. Herod the Great is a weird character. So I will try to give you a little bit of extra this morning, a little bit. Friends, please look at me. Some of us in this room are nice people. I'm not one of them, but some of you are very nice. Do you recognize Herod the Great kinds of people when they tell you things you want to hear? I want to come and worship him. I can just see him blinking. I mean, really? Herod the Great. Behind me, I say this. He was, first of all, a great survivor. If you were to tell me, you were to ask me, what's the number one characteristic of Herod the Great? Folks, look at me. Herod the Great knew Julius Caesar. Julius Caesar had a war between Julius Caesar and Pompey the Great. Yeah, and if you chose the wrong side, he somehow survived that. Julius Caesar was assassinated. Now the Roman Empire had Brutus, Cassius, and some other guys, Mark Antony and Octavian. What if you choose the wrong side? Well, Mark Antony and Octavian won. But they didn't get along. They split the empire and they went their separate ways. And then they had a war. Look at me. Herod the Great was on the wrong side of most of these. Did you hear me? But he was the consummate survivor. He could survive anything. Whatever it was, he was far. By the way, Dick Durbin, well, I'm going to quote our senator, and you can hold me on this. Years ago, when Barack Obama dropped his Senate seat to run for president, there was a guy that wanted to be a senator for 5 minutes. And Dick Durbin, one day, I'm for it. The next day, I'm against it. The next day, I'm for it. The next day, I'm against it. I'm for it. I'm against it. I'm for it. I'm against it. And people just keep electing fools like this because you don't understand Herod. Herod was the consummate political survivor. By the way, he chose Mark Antony's side. How did Mark Antony die? He committed suicide because he lost. And a teenager named Octavian won, later on gave himself the name Augustus and becomes the first Caesar of the Roman Empire. By the way, this is not me. This guy survived. Now, some other things that are better. This is what some people know. If you ever go to the Promised Land, he was considered one of the greatest builders of the era. He built the temple, which was considered one of the greatest. You don't see any of it today. The only thing left is a little bit of supporting walls at the bottom. We call them the Wailing Walls, the Wailing Wall. But friend, it was a massive complex that took years to build. He built Masada. He built bunches of fortresses. Friends, only in the last few years they figured out the kind of cement that he used to build. This guy was a great man in that way. This is no chump. This is no silly guy. He's a great man in those ways. He was also a great paranoid.
You say, why? Well, he was not Jewish, first of all. He was Idumean. He was from south. He adopted Judaism, and I will say he tried to be good to Israel or the Jewish people, but he was a mess. He was totally paranoid of everything and everybody. Because he wasn't a king by right, he was a king because he could maneuver through things. He grew increasingly paranoid.
I remember it was said of Stalin. When Stalin died, his mouth was so bad, his teeth, because he said, "No one will ever be inside my mouth." He trusted no one. That's Herod. He was also a great murderer. So, just so you know. I would consider a person a pretty good murderer that murders his favorite wife, who murders some of his own sons. Hello? See, I think we have religion. This guy was something else. And my favorite thing is when he's finally an old geezer and dying, he rounds up all the important people, puts them in, like, not a prison, but like prison. And he says this: "When I finally die, I want you to kill all these important people because no one's going to mourn me dying. And I want somebody to mourn for me." By the way, Herod the Great's the kind of person you try to stay away from. You say, "Pastor," and you're going to see this. By the way, I saw it on my news last week. Herod, there's no place in it. Place recorded that Herod killed those poor widow babies. If you're willing to kill your favorite wife and your own children, I think you'll kill somebody else's babies. I think there's something else we have to answer. Bethlehem, look at me, friends, is about as big as Nutwood, Illinois. When it was big, Nutwood was 75. There could not have been under age two over 10 to 15 children in the town, and there was probably five or less. He didn't kill 500 kids. You know, you have to understand, in my mind, Bethlehem is massive. But in reality, Bethlehem then was a tiny little place. I said earlier, when we drove into Mobile, we drove from Pensacola across. I'd never been there, never seen it. Driving from Pensacola to Mobile, when you cross the Mobile Bay, that's one of the best sights I've ever seen. I loved it. Driving back, I got a little bit more time to see the USS Alabama, battleship from World War II there. We didn't see it, but we got to take pictures and got to see it. Beautiful. But I've been to places like, this is Bethlehem? Look at me. Talk to Ade and Linda. They were at the Jordan River. How many Christian songs do we sing about the Jordan River? You think, oh, Mississippi, right? It's a muddy creek. And when it floods its bank. There's not. By the way, that's Bethlehem, just a little bitty place. But he did murder the children. He was a great paranoid. That's who he was. I say in the notes behind me, I make a statement. And this is the statement. But Pastor Warren, what about salvation for Herod? What about forgiveness? What about hope? All right, I'm going to say something that some of you will never learn because you never are going to preach before people, so I'm going to say it now. Every person in this room and every person that's ever been in this room comes here with certain things on their mind. I still remember about where my buddy Junior, which is generically, I love Junior. Right, Junior? Even though you haven't helped me out with your dad yet this year, but you will. I'm sure you will. A guy sat here 20, 25 years ago. I didn't know him. He walked in. He sat down there. By the way, lots of people, look at me, lots of people walk in. You say, oh, they're going to sing. And by the way, the guy sat there and kind of looked around. He seemed to be okay. Just sat there. But I could see him looking around. And he's doing mental calculation. I don't think he had any understanding of Christianity at all. He's calculating, hey, everyone, hello. He's doing what some of you are doing now. Is this important for me to hear? And he didn't think so. And I knew he had money. And I knew he was interested in power. And he's sitting out there the whole, it doesn't make a difference what I preached on. It doesn't make a difference if the best preacher in history was here. He's calculating. If I listen to this guy, what's it going to mean for me? How much money am I going to lose or gain? Will I have a better job or less? All right, forget that guy. Young couple sat over here years ago. They came about, their child came to this school for a year or two. They sat over here, nice looking couple. I knew they would never stay here. You say, why? You didn't see the guy. He's evaluating the church to think, how much profit can I have for coming to this church in my business? And when he evaluated it after 2 weeks, he never came back. By the way, that's Herod. You say, well, didn't he want to get saved? Didn't he want to be? I know a guy that talked to Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player, in my opinion, has ever lived. And if you have a different opinion, your opinion's wrong in this case. Thank you very much. But let me just say it this way. Michael Jordan listened to a guy about the gospel. I mean, the guy talked to him about how to be saved. Michael Jordan lives a certain way. Money and other stuff in those days. I don't know about today. I'm no criticism. By the way, Michael Jordan is the greatest guy that ever picked up a ball in my way of thinking. And is a pretty smart guy. But he evaluated Christianity the same way that couple did, the same way that guy did. I'm not going down there because that's not going to help me. So you got two reactions. Wise people, wise men, people that shouldn't be seeking Jesus, seeking him. You got Herod, by the way, that knew about Christ, the Messiah. He knew that. He just wants to get rid of him because if he can get rid of him, I can stay the king. We come to the third group, which is the hardest group for me, because I think we all identify with it. Matthew chapter 2, verse 3. There's a third group. You have the wise men, the Magoi, seeking him, Herod opposing him, and a third group. When Herod the king had heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And when he had gathered all the chief priests and the scribes of the people together, he demanded of them where, again, Christ, that's specific, the Messiah, should be born. He knew enough to know that there was a Messiah that was supposed to come. So he gathers together the chief priests, which is Sadducees and other texts, scribes, Pharisees. He gathers them all together. Where's the Messiah going to be born? And they said unto him, in Bethlehem, Bethlehem of Judea, for thus it is written by the prophet Micah, and thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art now thou least among the princes of Judah, for out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. I'm going to try to bring this home to you now. The third reaction is the scholars came ignoring him. The people that knew, the people that were educated, the people that had the knowledge, the people that kept the religion moving forward, they knew. They knew the text. They knew them well. And they did nothing. I think I have a quote. Did I put that quote on here? Can you go to the next section, Tom? Nope, go back to a psalm again. We'll come back to that in a moment. I must not have put it there. Have you ever heard this statement? Familiarity breeds. Let me just say this to you as kindly as I can. I find myself in category three more than I care to admit. I'd like to think I'm the guy seeking the Lord. I don't think I'm the person opposing the Lord, but I find myself identifying with those who are simply just, by the way, why didn't they go look for the Messiah? They knew. They knew the text. They knew where it was. It wasn't far away. Well, I think I know. I'm going to tell a couple stories. One of them about my buddy Big B, who isn't here this morning. It's all the same story, just different people. When I was in high school, two of my friends, I think Ronnie Crank and Bruce Kendall, I think, might have just been one of them. They got a job. It was a different kind of job. Down where I'm from, the jobs high schoolers got were usually farm work. You did tassel corn, picked up hay, stuff like that. One of the two or both of them got a job at Kentucky Fried Chicken. Back when, by the way, today if you go to Kentucky Fried Chicken right here in Zion and you get a chicken leg, I did not know the chickens were this, their leg was that long. Back in the day when you got a chicken leg, you understand? I remember coming to either one or both of them and saying, man, I wish I worked there.
I love Kentucky Fried Chicken and potatoes and French fries and coles. I'm getting hungry just thinking. I remember he looked at me and he said, "Yuck, I can never eat it. I can't stand the smell." He says, "The smell of that's in my clothes. It's in my hair. I'm around it all. Yuck, I can never eat KFC." And I'm thinking, I'm never working in KFC. I don't want my familiarity to breed contempt. Now, same story, different person. My son, sophomore, junior, senior in high school, we taught him to work. You all understand what work is. By the way, your kids need to learn to work. So we had a little, he had to get his own jobs. He had a bunch of, he worked over here at, what's the place over here? Target. He worked out at the lakeshore at their busing tables for a while. His least favorite job, Krispy Kreme donuts. If I brought John here right now, he would almost vomit. He said, I remember he was working out there trying to make money, what kids do. And he said, "Dad, have you ever seen what Krispy Kreme donuts are made of?" He says, "It's primarily grease and sugar." And he could never pick up a donut to eat it because, yuck, he grew, yeah. And the smell of that and the sight of all that sugar and all the, you know, 4,000 calories. By the way, I could become a diabetic by smelling a Krispy Kreme donut. You understand what I'm saying? Now, a year or two or three back, my buddy Big B was working at, where, Christy? Chick-fil-A. Everybody's favorite. I got to go to, I mean, if you're from the South, I got to go to Chick-fil-A. I'm having like anxiety. So I just asked my buddy Big B, "How do you like the food there?" Guess what response I got, Christy? You already know. So Big B, the best guy in this room, he's not here this morning. He doesn't want to eat Chick-fil-A because when you see it every day and you smell it, can I say to you, your greatest danger is simply ignoring Christ. And friend, I am sorry, I'm a little late, but you don't have to come back tonight. Can I say this to you as kindly as I can? Look at me. You can become so used to being in church that you sleep all the time, and there's nobody on earth that could keep you awake. I could jump up and down and spin circles and swing from the chandeliers, and you sleep through it. Do you not know why? Because you're now familiarity breeds, you think you know it all. Now, if you've ever been to seminary, this is what's the topic of all seminary. How do you survive spiritually? Here's the funny thing. You go into seminary to train to be in the ministry, and the question is, how do you survive seminary with your heart intact? A good pastor has three things. I learned this from Howard Hendricks. He says, a great pastor has three things: the mind of a scholar, the heart of a child, and the hide of a rhinoceros. I have at least two of those. I'm not telling, well, one of them, you know which one that is. Friends, read with me behind me. The psalmist says this: my heart is inditing. In Hebrew, it's a word that means like bubbling. My heart is just bubbling over a good matter. I speak of things which I have made touching the king. My tongue is the pen of a ready writer. Thou art fairer than the children of men. Grace is poured into thy lips. Therefore God hath blessed thee forever. My friends, there's got to be something where you and I, we're probably not going to be Herod. I don't think we should give ourselves the benefit of the doubt that we're the ones always seeking the Lord. I think we're ignoring him most of the time. And can I say this? I used to think it was because pastors preach the same things every week. I don't preach the same thing every week. I don't preach the same thing any week, and people still ignore him. So the problem is, then it becomes a matter of the heart. You're going to decide who you are. So Psalm 42, and the heart, or the deer, it's a kind of, don't get caught up in what kind of a deer it is, panteth after the water brooks, So panteth my soul after thee, O God. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before God? I think it all comes down to this, friend, in Ralph Warren's opinion. It's more than getting saved. It's more than being forgiven. It's more than you've experienced his grace. It is the ongoing, every day, seeking him out for more grace, more hope, more peace, more strength. It's about keeping Jesus focused in your life. It's, my sheep, hear my voice. And friend, there's nothing more beautiful than hearing his voice in the scripture. At salvation and every day after that. And I know them. What a privilege that is. And they follow me. Friends, you don't want three options. Seeking him, I think we identified far too quickly with that. I don't think that's as true. Opposing him, many people do for the reasons that Herod did. I want to be the king. I want to live my lifestyle. I want to do my thing. Therefore, I must oppose this. Sadly, the scholars just ignored him. Let's not ignore it. Let's stand, please, and pray together. Next Sunday morning, I'll be preaching on this next text on miracles. So I hope you're back for that. Let's pray together. Father, is it possible for us to move beyond getting used to stuff, thinking we know everything, thinking we've got it all figured out? Is it possible to move beyond that? Is it possible to get back to at least a mature, sophisticated simplicity? Is it possible for us to get to the place where we understand, but yet at the same time, we still have that heart of the child, that simple love and passion and concern? Father, may it be so. And if there's someone in this room this morning that is not yet a believer, they've never come to Christ, not the baby Jesus. The baby Jesus is simply the process by which the Son of God became man, the God-man, to die for our sins, but come to Christ for salvation. May they do so today. Christmas season ought to be the time of coming to Christ. For all of us in this room, it ought to be time not to ignore you, not to ignore your word, not to ignore the word of God, which endures forever. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall not pass away. Father, thank you for that. The grass withereth, the flower fadeth, but the word of our God shall stand forever. Help us to always desire you and your word. Help us to be those, yes, we grow. Yes, life happens. Yes, problems happen. Yes, irritations happen. All the above and 10,000 other things. But help us not to stop in that skeptical, cynical spot, but to keep moving to a mature simplicity where we still have the heart of the child and we love you from our heart. May it be so in Jesus' name. Amen.